Oh, is it recording now?
Yep.
Okay. Anything you want to say, Charles, to the recorder?
On the record?
Yeah, on the record.
Oh, no. I don't want to be held liable for anything I'm about to say right now.
Okay. That's actually bad. This means that Charles has controversial opinions that he doesn't want to share with the rest of the class. Yes. Would you like to say anything to the recorder on the record?
Wait, is your PhD done?
No.
Do you have a defense date?
No. I haven't even started writing yet. I'm still in my research here.
When did you take your qualifiers?
Fall 2022. That was a long time ago. I found eight new white hairs on my head per month.
I told Jerry whenever he wants
and now I have none.
No, Jerry should spend the night and then drive.
What?
I don't have my glasses. I can't drive.
Sure. I have a car. You can just be, you know.
That's illegal. That's illegal.
He would be breaking the law.
It says corrective lenses on my driver's license.
You're going to let him drive uncorrected?
What do I do that's illegal?
We know you've driven without your glasses before.
I've done it once.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Jessica.
That's because Claire broke her foot.
So
she cannot drive.
Sit in the front and ask dumb questions.
No, I'm going to ask you dumb questions and you answer. That's how I'm running this seminar. Oh, I have no water. I forgot my bottle. No, they're just having gossip time. I don't think you can open these windows. I don't see any, like, hinge. I have a PowerPoint. We can't go outside. I have a PowerPoint.
I don't want to meet outside. Jess, it'll be you and me and everybody else.
There was an accident. We broke a window.
Oh, you can all get on your phones and zoom in from outside.
I will sit here and just like that.
Oh, no. Okay. It's 10:45. Okay, let's begin with a very brief prayer. Okay. Lord, thank you for bringing us to retreat safely this year. Thank you for allowing us to be with our family, even though we have encountered several obstacles on our way to day two of our retreat. I pray that you would guide us in fruitful discussion today and hopefully help us have some fun also. All right, in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Okay, welcome to a discussion-based workshop, which means I will be counting on your participation. What I always tell my students is you get out of the class what you put into it. So if you put nothing in, you'll get nothing out. But I'm Asian, I just want to sit and be told the facts that are true. Okay, so today we're going to talk about family photos. We're going to talk about our families, not only our biological or legal families, but also our church family and also possible other family structures that we might encounter in our life, and how expanding our notions of family might help us integrate new forms of love and support into our lives. Okay, so our first discussion question. Why do we take family photos? So what are we trying to capture when we force all of the children to stand still for 10 minutes? Why do we have to take one every time the family is together? These are all questions I had at about 8 years old. And thirdly, what do we expect to see in a family photo? Or in other words, what would be weird if you didn't see in a family photo? So I decided to talk about this issue of the family and the church through the medium of the family photo because it's something we've all had to participate in, willingly or not. It's also the most material record of a family at a given moment in time. And family photos are kind of, they can be nostalgic in good and bad ways, right? So they remind us of people we love who are no longer with us, or relationships that have ended, or maybe they remind us of really good times that have passed, and moments where we felt particularly loved. So I want you to keep these kind of ideas of what the family photo is in your minds as you begin to discuss these questions. So I'd like you to gather up in groups of five-ish and discuss these questions for the next 5 minutes. Commence now. Yes. And then we will gather back after 5 minutes and discuss as a group. Looks like I'm going to have to keep an eye on this corner of the classroom.
Yeah.
Okay, I hear discussion is winding down, so let's resume our discussion as a group. So from your group discussions, I would like to hear some of your answers. You can raise your hand. Just tell me which question you're answering or, in general, what your group was talking about, and I'll do some board work while you're talking. Any volunteers? Clara.
Why do we take family photos?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay, people who are asking what that means, what do you think it means?
Ooh.
It's time for your deep thoughts. Dad.
What do we expect to see in a family photo?
Uh-huh. You can tell if the family loves each other, if they have genuine smiles, right?
Yes.
Okay, what else? Any other thoughts about any of these three questions? The more info we get, the easier the next exercises will be. Yes.
What are we trying to capture? We said proof that we were together.
Uh-huh.
You kids don't always want to hang out with me, so I need
proof. Oh, they're on Facebook.
Look at their face right now. They have an
emotional stick.
Any other comments, suggestions? To see the family resemblance, to prove that related. What else? Shawnee?
Oh, yeah, so going back to what Clara said,
uh-huh.
We were saying, like, oh, we don't take the one just for our generation, mm-hmm. but for, like, the future generation. Like, you always love to see your grandparents' photo when they were
mm-hmm. Interesting.
Capturing memories.
Capturing memories. It's true. Your memories are not quite as reliable as the photograph, right?
Yes.
For example, my dad thought that I was with them in Italy. Any other thoughts before we move on? Food? What? Food? Food in the photos? Oh, you would expect food in the photo? Does everybody else expects food in the family photo?
No.
Okay. Well, that's the only way to guarantee that everybody's there, right? You have them all around the dinner table. Anything else that you would expect or not expect to see in a family photo?
I describe it as that one time you brought home that ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, someone you're not on good terms with anymore. Anything else? Expectations for normal family photos or abnormal family photos? Violence? Okay. No random people, no ex-girlfriends, no violence. Or let's say generally more antagonism. Okay, so now that we've established our baseline expectations for what a family photo is, let's move on to another exercise. Whoa! Okay. So some of you older folks who are around when this picture was taken might have some more information to contribute to this discussion. But what I really want you to look at is the dress, the relative ages of the people in the photo, So what do the, all these details tell you? Like, why was it taken here? Maybe speculate on the relationship between all of these people. Think about all of the expectations that you established when we were just discussing, and apply them to your discussion of this photo. So number one, first question, again, look at the details, infer what you can. And then second, going back to that last question that we just discussed, what would you expect to be in the photo but isn't? And what can you infer, therefore, from the things that are absent from this photo? Which might take a little bit of acrobatic thinking, but I believe that you can do it. Okay, so take a minute to investigate this photo with your eyes and then pool your information with your discussion group. And we'll come back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Lull in the conversation. It's time to come back. Okay, so I know us Asians are very good at judging and observing based on visual evidence. So give me some of your observations and judgments about this family photo taken in San Francisco. Early 1900s.
It's colorized.
What?
It's Colorized.
Colorized, yes. Is this an observation about the family or the photo?
The photo.
Okay. Okay, so.
Pretty good job,
yeah. It looks like normal Chinese colors, maybe?
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
No happy face.
No happy faces. Or I guess it's more like.
Yeah.
We're going to look at another photo later on. But yeah, this is how people were taught to pose for photos because the exposure time was longer. So going like this for like 5 minutes doesn't really work. No peace signs. No, none of this. None of this. None of this. Okay.
Well, isn't it true that back then people don't really put on a big smile in the formal pictures?
Yeah, because the exposure time is very long, so you'd have to hold the smile, like, for 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's not that common. Really, really old pictures, they all have they don't do cheese.
Uh-huh. They didn't have cheese back then. Okay, any other observations?
No parents.
No parents, no grandparents? Is there a grandparent?
Are these parents or grandparents?
Interesting.
Mom or the big sister?
Well, we know from a lot of community records way back when, because of the Chinese Exclusion Act, Chinese restriction to America was very, very restricted until 1965. So it's completely plausible that this is a young woman who was sent over to America to marry what she thought would be a rich man about her age, who is definitely not. This happened a lot in kind of like the late 1800s, early 1900s, because there were no young women due to the Page Act of 1873, which banned Chinese women's immigration to the United States, specifically because they were all thought to be sex workers. Okay, so the relationship is kind of unclear, but we know that there's no extended family, right? So this is maybe something atypical, right? Because there are other family photos from around this time that show like there are grandparents, there are parents, there are maybe some aunts and uncles, and a lot of kids. What other observations can we make about this photo? Yeah?
Most of them have colorful
dresses. Yes, fancy dress. So we know that they probably dressed up for this occasion, right, to take the photo. What else? I saw another hand. I think they kind of used blue screen printing for the eyes to like liven up the color, which makes them kind of look racially ambiguous. But I trust it's a Chinese family.
Well, the clothing looks not as Chinese. For the baby.
Uh huh. Yeah, so it's a little bit Americanized. Americanized children, something we've seen in many families.
Photo's really historic.
Yeah, it's definitely historic. It was taken in 1912. So some background information about this photo. It was probably taken by a company. This is actually a postcard. So the story might be like there is a photographer who's taking pictures of San Francisco to create postcards that people can send to their families. And one of the novelties that you might, maybe as a white man who wants to like wow his family back in Illinois, is like, look at what we have in San Francisco, Chinese people. But yeah, I do want to mark kind of this absence of extended family, which is really important to kind of these non-Western family structures back in China that don't necessarily make it completely over to the United States until the immigration ban is lifted in 1965. Okay, any last observations before we move on to the next photo?
Are the clothes Chinese or the clothes that they're wearing? I'm not sure.
They're very like Qing Dynasty, like Manchu style almost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is Chinese.
Yeah, it's an ethnic costume that isn't really like the traditional Han outfit, but like I've seen some period dramas where the I've seen some Chinese dramas where they wear this kind of outfit. But I think it's definitely not typical. Okay, let's move on to another photo. And I need you all to promise me that you will not be rude. This is a family photo that was taken in Los Angeles in 2017 of a child after the passage of the Exclusion Act. Okay, so now get back into your discussion groups and please discuss the same questions. Apply the same analytical framework that you've been using. I've actually gotten that. They're like, your eyes are too big. I'm like, what? Okay, I'll cut you off there before you get too wild with it. I can't let you finish. Okay, let's compare photo number two to photo number one. What are your observations? Be polite. Yes. Happy people. Smile. The conventions are a little bit different. Anything else?
Your extended family is in the
Random extended family member. Uh-huh. Interesting. Random people? Random dog? That's not supposed to be there. Clear family relationships?
No, clear. No.
Anything else? We wanted to deceive people into thinking we had a dog.
We also kind of wanted to note that girl is maybe not Chinese.
I told you to be nice. Any other observations?
Karen Sender.
Yeah, that's a clear way to communicate, you know, the generational structure, right? So the parents are slightly elevated over the children. The dog couldn't really help it. I know I'm short, but the dog is shorter. Anything else that we'd like to observe about photo number two?
The photo is clear. Clear screen. Yeah, then the 1912 is like old and historic, but this is a new modern.
Yeah, definitely taken with modern technology.
No selfie. Yet.
All right. So there are clear differences in how the family photo has developed over the last century, right? There are certain genre conventions that we expect that you can already kind of pick up on in this photo. For example, generational leveling, the inclusion of pets, which might not have been thought about as kind of a kosher thing back in 1910 or 1912. And we know that there are large, expansive Asian family photos with a lot of extended family. But I really wanted to focus in on this particular convention because I thought it was a very apt demonstration of kind of what we expect from family photos in the modern day. And also, like, the way that we transmit information, right? Like, you don't need a caption, really, to understand what this is or why it was taken, because it's all kind of signaled to you in the photo. Okay. This will be a group discussion, too. Is this a family photo, and what are your arguments for and against? Pretty long ago. Uh-huh.
It's in my house. It's a Christmas picture. There's a gift of one.
Because you're standing like this. Okay, but is it or is it not a family photo, do you think?
No.
No, it's not a family photo? Too happy? Church family photo. Uh-huh. Church family. So there's a distinction that we're making between family and church family. Interesting. Okay, we're going to take a little bit of a detour to kind of define what our cultural expectations are of family structure, right? Because clearly we have two families. We have our legal or biological family, and we also have our extended church family. And we also might experience other family structures in our lives, like maybe other families that we're very close with who are basically relatives that we treat like relatives but really aren't. So this is the classic nuclear family structure. You can see, oh, four grandparents, everybody's alive, aunts, uncles. They didn't put cousins on here, but I think cousins are part of the family. And there are parents and siblings, really easy to remember. And so usually children in the Western family experience it as basically their parents and grandparents and siblings, maybe with the addendum of aunts and uncles who might live in other places. So this is kind of the nuclear family structure, which has only really been in place since World War II, right? The idea that it's parents and their children who live together, maybe grandparents if they need support, but your relatives live in other locations and not in the same house with you, right? So interestingly enough, this nuclear family is mostly a commercial invention, right? So after 1945, we have this economic boom. Every single family unit needs a house. It needs appliances, it needs clothes, and the more family units there are, the more like efficacious it will be to turn a profit in perhaps selling TV sets or dishwashers or single family homes, right? Because mature families are single families who don't live with extended family, right? And this communicates independence and maturity according to this kind of narrative of, you know, the Western model of the family, the ideal family. The Chinese family is quite different. Everybody has their own unique title. I know in some family reunions, it's just a constant stream of, what do I call this person? What do I call this person? What do I call this person? So the modern family structure in China probably resembles the Western one more these days, especially because of the one-child policy. But also, we still hold important these differences in relationships, in ages, who is an in-law and who is not an in-law, And all these are really clearly defined by the names that we give them, right? So there's a sense that's kind of built into Chinese language of the extended family, like you will even call strangers aunt or uncle, depending on kind of the social context, right? So I guess a quick fire question, how else would you say that Asian families are similar or different from this kind of classic Western family structure? More people, bigger, yes? Goes a lot farther back. Yeah, there are like three or four generations represented in this photo.
Hierarchy.
Yeah, very clearly defined hierarchy, especially like within the relative ages of the siblings.
Obligations,
yeah, coded into kind of like these Confucian ideals of reciprocity and hierarchy and power. And also respect, which we are taught very young. Anything else, any other comparisons that you want to draw between quote-unquote Western families, quote-unquote Chinese families? I think most of us have kind of a blended model, right? So we might live with our nuclear families, but we also have this idea of the extended family. So here I'm going to introduce a new concept called fictive kinship. We don't just have aunts and uncles biologically or legally. We're also raised to call our friends' parents auntie and uncle, right? So we call each other's brothers and sisters too in the church setting. This is a form of what anthropologists call fictive kinship. This is fictional, and we'll get to that in a bit, as opposed to consanguineal kinship, which is family by blood, like your grandparents or your children's, or affinal kinship, which is your family by marriage, like your in-laws or your spouse. So these are two ways of producing families, right? You either have children or you gain another family through legal marriage, so biological and legal. So fictive kinship encompasses all of these other family members. And they're really important in terms of like immigrant communities in particular, and especially in churches where you start to share the responsibilities of childcare and also kind of responsibility for each other as kind of siblings in a family would. So these early anthropologists kind of make the mistake of assuming that these fictive kinship relationships aren't real in the way that biological and legal relationships are, right? But we kind of know that they are different, but definitely just as important, right? Even if you wouldn't, let's say, treat your brother in Christ's wife as your in-law necessarily the same as you would treat your own in-laws, that doesn't mean that these people stop being your brothers and sisters and that you stop treating them a certain way, right? So these examples of fictive kinship also include foster child care. They include adoption in some cases. Usually adoption creates kind of these affinal kinship relationships because they are legally binding. But in like before the creation of the adoption industry, this was a little bit more of a fictive kinship relationship, right? Adoption in Eastern cultures has kind of a different history than it does in the West. But we see these roles and we see that they're also real in the sense that they come with certain responsibilities and obligations that closely resemble those of the equivalent biological or legal relationship, right? So your brother or your sister, or your aunt and your uncle. Aunt and uncle aren't just titles, right? They also come with certain responsibilities and types of relationships that you have with, let's say, your friend's child, or even just your friend, or your friend's parents. Let's move on to a very interesting photo. This was a photo taken in 1901. So there was this photographer that went over to China in the early 1900s and just started taking candid photos of everybody. And they were like, oh, well, these people weren't really taught how to you know, match the conventions of early portrait photography, right? They weren't just like, They actually felt like they could make any expression. And this guy who is termed Rice Uncle by our friend group is one of my favorite black and white photos of all time. So I want us to discuss a little bit, maybe for 2 or 3 minutes. What do we expect of someone we call uncle? So what are their duties and responsibilities? What is uncle behavior, Gen Z? As a large group, I did not dismiss you. Any thoughts?
Fun to hang out
with? Uh-huh.
They also make dead jokes.
Anything else?
Since they're not responsible for you, they have like the freedom to be irresponsible.
Irresponsible with children. Got it.
No, actually, it's the other way around. They are supposed to, how the hell is to be responsible?
Supposed? Anything else? Uncle behavior?
Like if you can't go to your parents, you can always go to your uncle.
Yeah, I think that is kind of like, that's your second set of parents, right? How about, let's switch this idea up a little bit. Not only the relationship of the uncle to the friend's child, but the uncle to the friend, so the lateral relationship.
Bro.
A guy you go fishing with.
It's really how many people have experienced a lot with the uncles, like you hang out with the uncles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that common, is it?
I mean, how often do we have communities where we have these fictive kin relationships, right? I think the church is very special in that regard, where you have certain expectations of who is and isn't present in your child's life.
Yeah. Well, I see Christina, right? Have a hangout with that uncle. She said they were ham eating and...
Okay, maybe we'll have more to say about this one. Auntie behavior. Aunties are, let's fill in the blank.
Easy, Bobby.
Wow! Okay, emotional support.
They make food and feed you.
Uh-huh. Head chef. Actually, uncles also cook, right? But I think that's just an Asian thing. Anything else but particular to the auntie? Uh-huh. I think this is a really interesting observation that some sociologists have made, is that women tend to be more of the record keepers, right? They create archives, and men are kind of, they tend to want to be in the curatorial role. Like, I remember when blah, 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 blah. And then they'll show the photo that the auntie took, right? But yeah, I think these are interesting ways that we have imagined these relationships, right? These extended family relationships that are quote unquote fictional, but also play very real and irreplaceable roles in our lives, right? Because like your friend's dad isn't necessarily your uncle, but we do have friend dads who are uncles. So there's this kind of Venn diagram where we're very lucky to have certain relationships in this fictive kinship network. Okay, can I get a volunteer to read the Bible? Shawnee, thank you.
Matthew 12:46-50. While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you." He replied to him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother."
Interesting. Statements that would get you disowned from an Asian family. But the fundamental question that I want to address here is there a distinction in the Bible between the church family and the legal or biological family, right? Is Jesus disclaiming his biological family here?
No,
what? He's adding to his family, right? He's actually creating these fictive kinship networks, right, that are actually present in Jewish culture and older kind of Middle Eastern cultures and also contemporaneously in Asian cultures that exist at the same time, right? So these fictive kinship networks, fictive, right, are actually only fictive in the modern Western sense, right? Like these are relationships that have been defined in like scripture, in like very old kind of historical texts and records. If you read 1 Timothy, actually, there are a lot of directives given from Paul to the families of the church on how they should be organized, how they run, what healthy relationships look like within these legal and biological families, but also between the family and the church, right? Can I get a volunteer to read 1 Timothy 5:1-8? Or maybe you can split that with your BFF. Timothy chapter 5, verses 1 to 8. Yes.
Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as he would a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, all in all purity. Honor widows who are truly widows, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents. She who is truly a widow left all alone has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Plan these things as well so that they may be without reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever.
Ooh. He really went off there. So is Paul making a distinction between the church family and the legal or biological family? What's the relationship that he's defining here?
Dylan?
Yes?
Try to make some trick move or something?
No, I'm just encouraging you to respond to me. Is Paul asking us to act differently between the context of your legal or biological family and your church family? Like, is there a difference, or should you be acting kind of the same towards them?
That's different. For your own family, you have responsibility mm-hmm. to take care of them first before you let the church mm-hmm. take
over. Yeah, if you read ahead, he has like this whole thing about widows. And how their own children should take care of them first before, so that the church can take care of quote unquote true widows, right? So there is like this idea that the church should primarily support these smaller family unit structures, right? That actually have to leave the church and go out into the world instead of always remaining in the church context, right? Any other comments, questions? Uncle Dan, you have a weird look on your face. What are you thinking? I don't care.
What are you asking?
Share your thoughts. Unless you don't have any. Okay. I'm encouraging him as I would my own father. Okay, since nobody wants to answer, I think there are two contexts, right? There's a church context and the world context. And to some extent, we do carry these fictive kinship relationships out of the church and into the real world. But, you know, Paul says, wherever two or more are gathered, blah, 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 right? Actually, the coming together of these fictive kinship networks creates the church, right? So it's not that the church generates fictive kinship, but also fictive kinship generates the church, right? It defines who we are and how we relate to each other, and that is what the church is, right? All right. We have about 10 minutes left. I'd like us to spend 5 minutes talking about what is unique about Chinese family culture. So in your wonderful, diverse experiences, what makes the Chinese family unique? I was going to title this slide The Airing of Grievances, but I decided to put a more positive spin on it. So does anybody have comments, brief comments, on what the strengths and weaknesses of the Chinese family might be?
I think for the Chinese families, uh-huh. people who go to Chinese store to buy perhaps beans, uh-huh. and I think going to the Chinese restaurant or traveling overseas in, uh-huh. Asian, in an Asian area.
Interesting. So these are some of the ways in which you can tell who is an Asian family. Who else? Yes. Uh-huh. And whether that's a strength or a weakness, we won't address today.
Okay.
Shani?
Oh, just caring for, the elderly grandparents. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's such a good thing in Chinese family.
I was told when I was a child, Chinese people don't let their parents go into a nursing home, so.
Chinese families always drink hot water.
Chinese families don't want to catch colds. They want to stay healthy. But yeah, they're very health concerned, right? You got to eat the right thing to balance your yin and yang qi in your body. My mom was like, "You're yeet, hey, just like your father." Uh-huh, food oriented also. No shoes. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think there are some positives and negatives to that, right? Like, individualism allows more expressive freedom, but it also allows for more isolation, right? You don't really have as robust of a support network sometimes. But this isn't true of every family, right? Any other observations about our lovely Chinese family?
I don't think this is true with of course, it's not true with every in-law relationship, but I think sometimes the women feel trapped. Because their in-laws have a lot of expectations.
Okay, yeah. Contentious in-law relationship.
Especially for the women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what different people define as respect and
age is a yeah. But I mean, I don't think it's bad, but I think that has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. You call by the title, you don't call the name.
Yeah, something weird about Asian culture that I've noticed is that you don't name your kids after other people. That's rude. Right? Like, even if it's the most famous person in Chinese culture, you don't name your kid after them. Any other comments about our lovely Chinese family?
Welfare?
In what sense?
Income.
Huh?
Income?
In what sense? Income is important?
Well, yeah. Just living-wise.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And very particular forms of material success, like you have the big ceramic vase in your house that doesn't hold anything. My cousin's parents have a big ceramic horse, and I'm like, I don't know what that's for.
To ride
into
war.
But it's just going to stay in place. They're never going to get to the war.
That's good.
Anything else? Clear.
I think it's like related to some of the other things that we talked about, but like expectations related to roles and like position and parents.
Which is, I think, like at the fundamental like in-law torment relationship, right? Yeah, I think all of these, we can't really delude ourselves into thinking that these expectations, either positive or negative, don't filter into our church relationships, because fictive kinships have the same expectations, right? You have certain expectations about hierarchy, you're food-oriented, right? You wanna take photos, you wanna record, you wanna look after each other's health. Caring for the elderly isn't just about your parents anymore, but also your aunties and uncles and their parents. And everybody, for better or worse, cares about your achievements, right? So
we wear shoes.
We do wear shoes in God's house, which maybe we shouldn't. So a couple of final words after we've kind of explored this idea of the Chinese family and how these fictive kinship networks kind of extend into the church family, or actually create the church family, right? If we accept fictive kinship as a true form of family, what are the effects, right? So it can reduce stigma towards non-traditional family structures because we are exposed to a diverse number of family formations in the church, right? Single parents. We have adoptees and blended families. We have people who are estranged from their biological families and our kind of fictive kinship network. It keeps our focus on community instead of these isolated nuclear family units. right? Like families can come into the church and leave the church, but while they're in the church, they're no longer kind of these people who have like very closed doors and fences, right? Nobody knows what's going on inside that family. If you enter the church, your business is now other people's business too, for better or worse. I think it also creates stronger intergenerational bonds, right? Because if you are a child and you don't really have exposure to other adults in your life that are part of your family, no matter what kind of family it is, then you have only one kind of idea of how to relate to older people, right? Whereas if you're in a church environment and you have these fictive kinship relationships with your uncles, your aunties, of various kind of age ranges and relationships to you, then you begin to think, oh, there are different ways to be kind to people or to take responsibility for people or to care for people, right? I think that is one of the best features of these fictive kinship networks is that kids learn about different types of relationships and how even one type of relationship can look very different between different people. And finally, it holds legal slash biological families ideally accountable for their internal behaviors, right? So you can't run your family poorly, like Paul says in 1 Timothy, and suddenly decide that you're a good and like productive member of the church, right? You also have to behave well inside your own family union. But you also don't have to do that alone, right? You have these fictive kinship networks that are assisting you and also modeling behaviors for you. And so you form these reciprocal, like, behavioral relationships that teach you about, you know, different types of relationships and maybe what you can learn from them or what you don't have to learn from them, right? I think on the flip side also, when we emphasize the nuclear family to the exclusion of all other forms, which our legal system kind of does, it creates immense burdens on individuals for child care, for parent care, and all of these other responsibilities that used to be the responsibility of the extended family, but now fall mostly on kind of like this small grandparent, parent, child family unit, right? It also isolates the family from the community, right? If we don't see fictive kinship networks as real or something that we should engage in, then that kind of cuts us off from all of these educational opportunities, not only for children, but also for adults on what relationships can look like. I think it also makes us more susceptible to fearfulness and reactionary culture because we see ourselves as like isolated units inside larger communities that could harm us, right? If you don't know people, then maybe your expectation when you watch the news or only listen to social media, you're like, everybody's out to get me and my family, and therefore I'm going to hold certain attitudes and ideas about how the world works. So why look at this through a cultural lens at all? I think there is a very cultural way to understanding how we conceptualize family, and I think the family photo is a very good starting point for how we visualize relationships between each other, right? I think it's really important for us to establish clear expectations for what familial love looks like and also to open ourselves up to new possibilities of what that love looks like. So again, receiving education and these many different kinds of ways to love. Because we can only really change our behaviors when we realize what our limitations are. And sometimes these limitations are very cultural, right? So I think the questions that I want people to carry forward from this workshop are, what keeps bringing us together as a fictive kinship network or as a church? How can we strengthen those bonds? How do these baked-in attitudes of the Western family or the Chinese family actually limit us? And how does our awareness of these limitations change how we conceptualize the family? To include these non-real, quote-unquote, relationships and create kind of this space for us to love in a more free and diverse way in a more Christ-like context. So that is the end of my presentation. Thank you for attending. Thank you for your vigorous contributions. We have run a little bit over time, but that's okay. Lunch is now served not by me, but by other people. Let's take a family photo.
Okay. May I see everybody? see everybody?
Against that edge wall, there you go.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Yay!
So we need to change our name to Chinese Christian Effective
Kids. Exactly.
Do you have iPhone?
I do have iPhone.
I will job it to you.
Oh, I need to turn on my Bluetooth.
Do you still need to turn on Bluetooth or I can
oh, I have it.
Bum you?
You can just
Let's
drop
see.
It to me. Mine, it's Jess's iPhone.
No, but I thought you have that latest app, latest version, you just touch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you have the Bluetooth on.
I didn't know. I'm used to having my 7-year-old phone.
This is a new one? Oh, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, that's me. Yay. Wow. Yay,
did I
accept.
Phone you?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Fantastic. Well done.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was like, let's have something funny.
One thing I forgot to mention, and maybe next time is Chinese family, we don't talk about uncomfortable subjects.
Eating again?
I think that's true. I think the fact that it wasn't mentioned means that we don't bring it up, because that's also uncomfortable to talk about. We don't talk about the fact that we don't talk about it.
So I thought of that, then it was kind of, okay, another subject. But we have to, because there are some families that have children who are kind of like coming out as gay.
Mm-hmm. And nobody talks about it.
Nobody talks about it, and then
sometimes you just pretend they're dead.
Yeah, and then the parents don't want to. Kind of very tough. So I think we have to learn how to kind of like talk about these things, and then have a proper understanding. You know, next time, right?
Yeah.
I forgot. It was too late.
People can't even talk about when their kids are sad. So gay is a completely different level.
Yeah. Well done. Huh?
Thank you. Thank I'll see you at lunch. Oh, that's somebody else's water bottle. Okay. Still recording.